Okay, and welcome back after the break here, everyone, to Revolution Radio, and I'm on PSN Radio, and I'm also on APRI Radio Network. I want to welcome up my next guest. Whoops, I'm getting a bit of a feedback there. Can you lower your speaker a little bit, please? There we go. My next guest is a lawyer in limbo down in Mandeville, Louisiana. I want to welcome Naneem McCool from McCool Law LLC. Welcome, Naneem.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me, but I want to caution you about referring to me as an attorney because as far as the Supreme Court of Louisiana is concerned, I have been disbarred.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. You're in limbo a little bit here. So from what I know, you ran for the children's court, family court down there in your area. And let's just get into your story a little bit, Naneem. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Glad to be here.
Let's explain what happened and how long ago was this?
It actually started where did it start? Depends on who you ask. For me, it really started in 2011. That is when the conduct that eventually, you know, resulted in formal charges occurred. And then, of course, it took all this time for them to decide to disbar me. But it was related to a case involving custody. And the trial courts would not follow the law. They wouldn't afford due process. The judges just didn't do their jobs. And
do you mean the family courts?
Right. Not every state has a family court, and not every, even in Louisiana, not every parish has a family court. But here, yes, we have a family court. But the case was actually in two different states. Part of it was in Mississippi, and then part of it was here in Louisiana. And in Mississippi, they don't really have a family court. They have something called chancery court, and then they have something called I think they call it juvenile court, but I'm not very familiar with a Mississippi process. In any case, our portion of it was in our family court in this parish, and it was before a judge who was specifically elected to be a family court judge.
Sorry about that. I was trying to get your former Facebook a Facebook page that you have up, Naneem McCool for family court judge.
That Facebook's page is still up.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But let's get, can you get into the particulars of what actually happened?
Sure. I think, you know, the biggest point to make here is that although this story is specific to me and what happened in this case, unfortunately, if anybody out there has been in family court, they may recognize it's a very familiar story. And essentially, the short version is there was this, I had a client come to me. She was a mom. She had two small children at the time. They were very young. And she was essentially frantic because she had all this evidence that her children were being sexually abused by their father. And she couldn't seem to get an attorney to help her put that evidence before a court. And things had gotten very crazy to her, very bizarre. She didn't understand what's going on. And she heard that I practiced in that area, so she came to me. The problem was that her case was in Mississippi because that's where she was married and divorced. And she now lived in Louisiana, and that's where she found me. I'm licensed in Louisiana, or was licensed in Louisiana, and I couldn't represent her in Mississippi. So initially, all I could do was try to help her ask questions, gave her some questions to ask, some things to consider in hiring an attorney in Mississippi. But over the course of the next 4 years, that was in 2008, I think she came to me, early 2008. And over the course of 4 years, 3 years, the case just became more and more complex.
Or bizarre.
And for a while, the girls were safe. But in 2011, the judge in Mississippi had a conference in her chambers with the mom's attorney and the dad's attorney, and then what they call a guardian ad litem, who's supposed to be the children's attorney, although that really works that way. And they had this conference in chambers. It didn't take place on the record. There was nothing set to hear that day. They were going in to pick a trial date for the upcoming trial on whether or not the children had been abused or not. And when the attorneys left that conference that took place off the record, they walked out with an order that allowed the dad to have unsupervised visitation in 3 weeks. So, mom, you know, that's inappropriate. I mean, that's an illegal order. Anywhere in this country, an order that's issued without notice and an opportunity to be heard, except in very specific circumstances and with very strict limitations, it's considered null for lack of proper process. So, but you know, on paper it's null, at least theoretically, but if the judge refused to acknowledge that she's wrong, or the attorney won't take the proper steps to have that order declared null, it's absolutely enforceable. And so mom came to me, and she was frantic because her children were frantic. And we tried to get Louisiana to exercise jurisdiction. And under the law, there is a provision where one state who doesn't necessarily have jurisdiction can take emergency jurisdiction if a child is in imminent danger or is in danger of imminent harm. And so we asked the Louisiana court to take jurisdiction of this case because we alleged in our pleading, we put forth the facts that we believed justified the Louisiana taking jurisdiction. And we filed that here in Louisiana along with, we sought relief under Louisiana's domestic abuse laws that afford a lot of protections on paper. And we asked for a couple of different types of relief, all of which, because they were very fact specific, they required a hearing, right? You have to have a hearing to know whether or not these allegations are factual or not, or if there's evidence to support them. We filed that in Louisiana. We followed all the rules. We followed them to a T. And that was randomly assigned to Judge Dawn Amaker, who is our family court judge in Division L here, and the judge I ran against. And even though we did everything we were supposed to do, we followed all the rules, she would not allow us to have an evidentiary hearing that day. And under the rules, if the judge denies you a hearing on the day you're asking for immediate relief, they are required to set a hearing depending on the circumstances, either within 30 days or within 2 weeks. And she not only denied us a hearing that day, she dismissed all of our claims without taking any evidence. And, you know, my short version of that is, how can a judge claim to be unbiased if they make a decision without ever listening to or looking at the evidence? And she dismissed it without giving us any relief. I sought relief from the appellate court, and it's called a writ. And the appellate court denied us relief. And then I sought relief to the Louisiana Supreme Court. But I was so angry with the First Circuit and the appellate court and the family court judge for denying relief that while the writ was pending before the Louisiana Supreme Court, I helped mom circulate a petition on the petition site and change.org, trying to draw attention to what these judges were doing. And that is ultimately what they used to find that I had engaged in ex parte communications and that I had made false and misleading statements about the judges. And
so was it more or less how dare you question the lords and the masters?
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely. I mean, when I was the long drawn out process of formal charges ended up in front of the Louisiana Supreme Court, and I literally had Justice Noel, who wrote the opinion disbarring me, she looked at me and she was outraged and she said, "What were you thinking? How could you criticize a judge? Don't you know it's so dangerous to criticize a judge?" And all I could think was, gee, I've never heard of a judge, you know, dying from criticism. I've certainly heard of people dying because they can't get protection from the court. You know, victims of domestic violence are treated terribly in our court system. Children are treated terribly in our court system. Parents in general are treated terribly in our court system.
They are.
And but I've never heard of a judge dying from criticism. you know? So yes, it was absolutely, how dare you?
This is just bizarre to me. There has to be other cases like yours, but you're actually the first one I've ever heard of that's been disbarred for a criticism. Was it just criticism, or do you think it was because maybe you ran against this other judge?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The timing of it is fairly suspicious. So in 2011 is when I engaged in this help with this petition. And the election, you know, she came up for re-election in 2014. So I had not heard anything, you know, about the complaint that was filed against me for months and months and months. And it had been pending for almost exactly 2 years. And then I announced formally that I was going to run against her. And a week later, I was hit with formal charges. So, you know, pretty suspicious to me, but I couldn't say, you know, I wasn't part of that decision-making process.
You're not that cynical?
You make up your own mind, obviously.
You don't want to be that cynical? Is that what you mean?
Well, I think that's actually just too simplistic. And I think it actually lets them off the hook. I think she was able to manipulate. There's such a, I mean, attorneys pretty much revere judges. And I don't know when that started.
Probably way back in the beginning.
From respecting how difficult a judge's job is and respecting, you know, that they, the limits of what they can do and you know, understanding that they don't necessarily always get it right, but it's a difficult job, to absolutely respecting, revering their absolute status as a judge. But that's what the legal system has become. So I believe that because she was a judge, she was able to manipulate this individual in the ODC and then the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. And then because he was in the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, he was able to manipulate his, you know, his, and then it became about, you know, criticizing a judge, and they were just all outraged. So I think it was partly that she was a judge. I think she did it and she urged it because of the reelection. I think that absolutely was her doing, but I think the rest of it was just more about how sick and twisted the profession has become. I mean, it's really not that simple. I think the profession has become so distorted with its own need to be, you know, it's all about individual ego and, you know, it's not really about helping people anymore, which is why I became an attorney. I wanted to help people. Imagine that.
Yeah.
I wanted to help people.
Yeah. And when did you first become an attorney?
It was in 2000 that I was admitted. I went to law school late in life. I started in 97, and then I graduated in 2000 and passed the bar the first time, admitted in 2000.
Well, that's good. A lot of the people in the chat are kind of sympathizing with you. There's a cabal of thugs out there, a banjo picking gal says, and legal beagles, but I don't know.
It's interesting that, you know, there are other attorneys. It is becoming more and more common to sanction or discipline attorneys for being critical. And, you know, because I'm now one of those, you know, I'm part of that ilk, if you will, I hear more and more about it. There was another attorney. Well, you had him on your show, Barry Goldstein.
Yes.
Who was disbarred for, many say, because he stood up for, he was a great advocate for moms and victims of domestic violence. And I think they charged him with some improper conduct with his trust account. But when you know, being a victim of how they manipulate things and they make things up and turn innocent things into really terrible things, I would be surprised if Mr. Goldstein actually was guilty of doing anything improper with his client's money.
Oh, I would be surprised also. It seems to me, in the research I've done here anyways in the last a couple of years, Nadine, that the system, CPS, the entire CPS system around the nation has really come under attack for being biased against the mothers.
Parents?
Here. Well, yeah, the parents also, but mainly the mothers in general.
I don't know if I don't have any faith in CPS because They aren't properly trained. They have too much work, and there's no transparency. And I've seen how they work, and I've seen how they're used in family court. It's a disgrace. But I don't know that I've seen them have a bias against mothers. I've seen them essentially be nasty and vindictive because a mother may become outraged at being accused of abusing their child, and that worker who has a chip on their shoulder will then make it that a personal vendetta to remove the child. And I've certainly read many, many cases where, and you can read them in the news as well, right? I mean, it's crazy how much power some kid out of college with maybe a year, you know, out of college, or maybe even 5 minutes out of college, can then go and take your kid away for no other reason than because they want to.
Yeah. Well, Nanine, we've been joined by a friend of mine. His name is Greg Ford. He's out in California, and he is kind of interested in your case, and he would like to know some particulars. If you could just recap a little bit.
Sure.
Hello, yeah. Greg.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Steve, yes. I'm sorry. I was going to mention this young name.
Your Skype or your sound is going very, very kind of wacko. Try that again, Greg.
Yeah, I didn't hear Greg. Oh, he dropped. This surprised me. His sound was really bad. Maybe he'll call back.
Yeah, I think he might call back on his cell phone. That's a little bit easier of a call, but where were we? We were talking about the CPS system, Nanine, and I know I got introduced to you from Maria Bastos. She's a friend. She's down in Virginia, a little bit north of you there, but north and east, but
everything's north of us down here, except for
Florida. Except for what? Except for Mexico?
Florida. Maybe some parts of Texas.
Florida and Texas and Mexico, right? Yeah. But where was I getting at? Oh, she has been a victim of what's called parental alienation syndrome, along with a lot of other moms. Have you had experiences with that, or...?
I know what parental alienation syndrome is, and frankly, you know, this is one of those things where we all use the same words to mean something different, or maybe we're using different words to mean the same thing. There absolutely are parents who engage in conduct to try and sever a relationship between a child and a parent. But to call it a syndrome, I think, is it hurts the very problem that you're trying to solve, because a syndrome implies that there's a way to sort of diagnose it and to identify it and know when it's actually, you know, occurring. Whereas alienation, I think that's just a character flaw, and or maybe even some parents being really, really angry. But I do know of parents who have lost touch with their children and had that relationship completely destroyed by a vindictive, nasty parent. I see it happen. I've actually had a case where the mom was absolutely engaged in trying to do this, but the dad was, you know. He was too determined not to be thrown out of his kids' lives, so he was able to.
Yeah. Well, we have been joined by Greg, and he's back on his cell phone. So, welcome, Greg.
Yes, good to be back. Sorry, I tried to pull up the Skype, and out here in California, we're sitting right on the coast. I mean, I'm looking at the ocean right now, and as soon as a cloud pulls, goes across the sky, or a wind blows in, it pretty much cuts off.
Gets a little surface. Wobbly, doesn't it? Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping, Nanine, that you could recap a little bit. Like I said, Greg was interested in the story on how you got disbarred.
Wow. So the short version is I got disbarred because I told a couple of judges to look at the evidence and apply the law before they made a decision, and signed a petition that essentially said that. That's it in a nutshell. If you have some specific questions, I hate to go through it all over again. It's a long story.
Right, sure. I understand. Well, no, I'm interested mainly because of, you know, my experience all over the world, working as an intelligence operative and seeing how governments are built and how governments are dismantled. And one of the core issues that I have found is, first of all, is education. Okay, the governments always attempt to take over or do take over the education process. And they also try to mold the family, okay, remove the family from the traditional nuclear family structure into a family that has a little bit more control injected into it by the state or by a government system, all right? And I'm seeing that happen a lot in the United States, in the U.S. now, okay, where agencies, all of a sudden, that agencies were, they had a protective function, a protective service, protective mode, or a monitoring mode, and then all of a sudden they're being given rights, to intercede where they never have been before. And I think it goes along with the militarization of several other organizations. This is something that I'm seeing with the Jade Helm project going on in Texas. Is the first thing they want to know is, first of all, is FEMA is going door to door asking if there's any weapons in the house. And then it's asking if there's any food caches, and then the names and ages of all the people living in the house. All right, that seems to be a real critical issue.
Well, Greg, I want to interject in here also that to break up a country or a society, you do have to control the nuclear family.
And that's absolutely correct, Steve. Absolutely.
Don't you think it's more about education, though? I mean, I think I agree with you, Greg, about our education system. It starts there. Our children aren't taught the Constitution, and they're not taught how to think critically. So we've raised this army of children who only want to play video games. But, you know, this issue of breaking up the nuclear family, I don't know, that seems to have been self-inflicted. You know, we've been doing that to ourselves for quite some time. You know, the divorce rate being 50% and all.
Society changed back at the turn of the century. And, a lot of the societal changes came from the entertainment system or the social engineering system.
Well, there was a lot of things going on. I mean, the turn of the century, we were, starting the industrial age was picking up and things, the way we supported ourselves, we were shifting from the agricultural to the suburban.
And the educational system changed then too, didn't
right.
it?
Well,
yeah.
Exactly.
That's absolutely correct. Right.
But there are so many things going on that I think it's difficult to, and to some degree, we are the government, the people who take these positions and are in these positions of power. They grow up, a lot of them in our communities, they're our neighbors. They start somewhere. Where do they come up with these ideas? I mean, really,
I'm sorry. I wasn't able to catch your first name in all of this. What is your first name?
Nanine, like Jenine, but with an N.
Jenny. Okay.
No.
Nanine.
Not Jenny.
Unfortunately. N-A-N-I-N-E.
Audio is not very good out here, unfortunately.
Okay. So. Okay. That's all right.
That's okay. You can call me Jenny. I'll be Jenny
for
the
day. Did you say Jenny? Okay. So anyway, by the way, Jenny, correct? Jenny, I am the representative, I believe, in the United States. I am the sole representative of the Bull Moose Party, okay? And I am going to be the write-in, all right? The write-in for, on this coming presidential race, okay? So one of my first priorities is I am going to dismantle the state bar in each, lawyer's bar in each state, all right? I have come to the conclusion that, first of all, litigant lawyers are the real HIV in our society, all right? And of course,
wow.
A lot of lawyers, will just bristle when I say that. Too bad, all right? You look at what's going on right now in our society, in America, and you can face, and you can look at the substrate of activity that led to all these actions, and there's an army of litigant lawyers, involved.
But aren't they just the tools of really wealthy people who are trying to, make things work better for them? I mean, attorneys are essentially just mouthpieces for someone else.
Well, yes. Oh, yes. But the problem is, as I say, HIV, okay, they are embedded in the system. And I'm speaking from California here. I was just in Canada, and I was running by some of the behavior of like these California lawyers. You know, I was running it by some of these Canadian lawyers, and they were dumbfounded at the behavior, you know, that is being exhibited now, okay, by lawyers. And by the way, the state bar in California is not only useless, worthless in monitoring bad behavior, you know, right, of lawyers, okay, but they are actively covering up, you know, the bad behavior
right. Same here in Louisiana. So, same thing. We got the same problem here.
Right, exactly. So I'm going to dismantle, okay, the state bar, okay, the state bars of each state. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in our
Craig. I have to get elected first, but that's Greg, what I'm going to do.
She has a question for you, Greg.
Do you believe in our Constitution, though?
Yes.
Okay, so under states' rights, even if you're the president, you can't dismantle the state's bar associations because that would violate, that issue of states being able to manage.
Yeah, but issues. I've got a little bit of a defensive there. What president in the last 200 years has actually cared about a state's constitution, though, Nanine?
Yeah, but the point is they should. I mean, if we believe in our constitution, I mean, what are you saying? So everybody else hasn't, so he shouldn't either? I mean, what we want is who will respect our constitution, right? I mean,
two wrongs don't make a right, that's for sure.
Right, and you know, I think on paper, we have the most amazing country on the face of the planet. The problem is everybody keeps, you know, sort of throwing, oh yeah, that's wonderful, but I'm going to do something else. I mean, you know.
So you have situations like Alberto Gonzalez referring to the Constitution of the United States, the very premise, the very groundwork of our legal system, as a quaint antiquated piece of paper, all right, that has no relevance to today's society. And you have a President George W. Bush stating that he was not going to be held accountable by any goddamn paper.
Well, you can't really say that, though, Greg. Okay.
I'm sorry?
I say you can't really say that here, though, but okay.
No, George Bush said it.
Yes, I know.
The President of the United States said it. So, yeah. All right. So
which
it's
one?
Time that
C-U-R-W.
We brought some teeth back into the legal profession, all right? Our country runs on law, okay? Those laws are built, are made for a reason. Those laws are made to be adhered to, all right? And so if we don't have any kind of body governing how those laws are administered and any kind of integrity that is placed in the administration of those laws, then it's time to jump back and reform the system. And like I say, the whole government.
You want to throw away the Constitution and start over?
Say that again.
I was asking, do you want to throw away the Constitution and start over?
Absolutely not. I'm saying revamp those state bars. All right.
But you can't.
The state bar.
You would have to become. Right. You'd have to become an attorney and do it that way because you know the checks mm-hmm. and balances things. To the degree that I agree that there's our state bars and the bars association across the country are broken because of the lack of integrity, not just with attorneys, but within our society as in general, I would go and legislate for doing away with the necessity and the requirement that people go to law school in order to be an attorney. And I would also do away with the laws that prevent people from practicing law without a license, because all of those laws are made just to give attorneys job security and help them get wealthy.
I've got a question, though, Nanine. How do you hold judges and attorneys feet to the fire? How do you hold them accountable?
Forget it with judges. You can't hold judges' feet to the fire. That's absolutely not happening unless we convince this country to do away with what's called judicial immunity, right? Because we have the fox watching the hen house.
So
right? Judges are supposed to police themselves. That's never going to happen.
So basically, they are the lords and the masters of the country then, aren't they?
They absolutely are. And people should begin to understand how powerful judges are. If a judge says the sky is green, then by God, don't tell him any different or her any different. Because, you know, they said it was green, so it must be green, right? They're judges.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've had a couple presidents here in the last 40, 50 years say that if the president does it, it's not illegal.
I know, and then that's something. I'm the president, so everything I do must be legal. But there are people that actually buy into that. There are people who actually think, oh, absolutely, they are imbued with some special power that once they take this office, they can do no wrong. It's disturbing. What happened to land of the home of the free and land of the brave? Where did those people go?
They're all watching Honey Boo Boo and Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah,
that's what happened to them.
I think the fact that we got that, for that moment in time, we got that collection of really forward-thinking, you know, brilliant people together to write this great Constitution and get this country just on track for a few short years was just, you know, it was a miracle because, you know, the sheep have now taken over.
No, the sheep are unfortunately, they're out in the pasture grazing on the nice green grass or the blue grass or whatever.
You're right.
Green grass and the fox is in the hen house. That's what I think.
Yeah, slaughtering the sheep one at a time so the rest of them don't pay attention and don't care.
Right. Well, you know, they've got
examples of them.
They've got the mentality, the Nina Gregg, people have the mentality, since it's not happening to me, I'm not going to do nothing about it.
Hear it every day, all the time.
Well, I don't think Jenny understands my background, Steve. Okay, I am right now embroiled in a real constitutional issue, all right? I am the only living intelligence operative to ever be renditioned and tortured, the only U.S. citizen, all right, to be renditioned and tortured out of a war zone for trying to stop war crimes, all right? And that has given me a dramatic perspective on our legal system,
Thank you for standing up.
Well, yes, just as Steve will tell you, just look at Abu Ghraib. I am the doctor who filed the charges. Okay, at Abu Ghraib to try to stop the greatest set of war crimes this country has ever committed. And I can't even begin to tell you and the listeners what a fiasco the legal system has presented itself as being. All right. Okay. You know, and I've had judges look me right in the eye and say, yes, you were tortured. Yes, you were renditioned. Yes, war crimes are against the law, but there's nothing we can do. We cannot hold the government accountable. We cannot hold the Department
of
Defense accountable. All right.
That's true, though.
For committing war crimes. All right. We can't hold Dick Cheney responsible for the atrocities that he has directly all over the world. All right.
Essentially, that's the truth, because civil courts have no jurisdiction over military courts. So since it was a crime committed by the military, you're right. The judges cannot. They have no jurisdiction. They have no power to do anything about that.
And in my case, this is the first time that a sitting U.S. president has been directly involved in war crimes. The vice president of the United States has been involved directly in war crimes. All right.
Which president?
And George W. Bush. George W. Bush was directly involved in ordering outside the chain of command, the military chain of command, all right, the UCMJ, to torture people and murder people, all right? He stated it in public. He stated it for the record. And Dick Cheney is directly responsible for transferring the operations in Central America to the operations in Iraq, which consisted of death squad formation and torture chambers.
Greg, so, I need to come to the defense of a lawyer, though. You are still alive because of a lawyer. Go ahead and explain that to Nanine.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Yes. There's no question about that. I contacted when I had a chance. First of all, I went to my command, okay, and by the way, you can look this case up, I'm asking you to. Look this case up. It's case 14-15050 in California, the Ninth Circuit Court, all right?
Basically 14-1, tell me again?
14-15050.
Okay.
And it's me, Frank Gregory Ford, versus the command of Abu Ghraib prison.
Okay.
And starting with Victor Ortega, Timothy Ryan, Merle Madera, and the infamous Colonel Thomas Pappas. So what happened was when I said, look, you know, we can't be doing this to the command, they said, we don't care what you think the law is. We don't care about the Geneva Conventions. And if you don't withdraw these charges within 30 seconds, we are going to do the same to you. All right. And so that immediately took it out of the normal realm of military law, UCMJ, and placed it into the World Court, okay, the Geneva Conventions World Court. And that also included the entire chain of command, which is includes the Commander-in-Chief of the United States, George W. Bush. So, in other words, this rogue organization said, okay, fine, try to hold our feet to the fire, all right? And as of last Friday, the Department of Justice has agreed with me, and they are going to be investigating my case and also the entire American Psychiatric Association, and they also are going to be directing the FBI to investigate how the entire torture theme came about in the United States military and in the United States intelligence services as of this last Friday, a few hours ago.
Yeah, but they're still investigating themselves, though, Greg.
Yeah, you know they're in loss.
Yeah,
effectively.
Well, hey, you know, first things first, you know, Steve. First things first.
But now, Senator Feinstein
actually committed. She, thanks to me, I was the person who informed her of what was going on, and the House Committee on Intelligence and Collections. Decided to launch her own investigation, thanks to me, all right? Very clearly now, yes, that the wheels are grinding slowly, I believe, Jenny. I believe the wheels are grinding slowly, but they are grinding very finely, all right, at this point. That's all I have, but one thing I can say is the people of the United States that have heard this case are absolutely in support of it, all right? Completely in support of it. So I can say that, yes, I have seen how the legal system and lawyers will mangle, twist, warp, incestuous the relationship, okay, of laws and how they defend each other, okay, and how they defend citizens.
Greg,
I've seen that. I mean, you know, look at my case. You want to see a classic example? Look at my case.
I say, Greg, I want to. Right. I don't want to focus the rest of the show on you because I do have Nanine on, and it is about her case. But I thought you was going to say something there a second ago, Nanine.
Well, I think, you know, what I was going to say is, you know, I think it's a little unfair to say lawyers and you know, they, and because the government is not the same mind. It's not one mind. It is lots of individuals, and they don't all think or speak with the same mind. Obviously, Greg, you were part of the military, and you did not think and speak with the same mind as those who supported the torture. You spoke out against it. And there are people out there, and including attorneys, there are good attorneys out there who care very much about justice. But it's increasingly, we have put, you know, these people in positions of power that, you know, don't really respect the ideals and principles there. They're more there for their own ego. But I absolutely admire what you did. And, you know, it took tremendous courage, obviously. And I'm reading here that they strapped you to a gurney and flew you out to a metal hospital, which I can't imagine how awful that was. But, but you know, the thing I think it's important to remember that, you know, clearly you're aghast at how you think that you're speaking up for what's right and you're standing up for the principles that we're supposed to be fighting and dying for. And instead of being, you know, acknowledged, you're treated like a Looney Tune. But I think it's important to look for and find and remember that there are people out there who absolutely are speaking up and speak. There isn't, I continually hope that there is a very quiet, although not always silent, majority in this country who cares very deeply about how far away from what we were supposed to be that we've become, and that, you know, it's starting to shift. Maybe I'm just an eternal optimist, but I just have to believe that it's starting to shift.
Well, I think people are starting to realize that maybe these judges and some of the politicians aren't lords, aren't the masters.
I hope so.
It would be nice anyways.
Mm-hmm. Now, Steve, you had mentioned that, yes, I am alive because of an attorney. Okay. Yes, I can actually say for a fact that I am. When I was being threatened by the command, you know, that if I didn't withdraw my charges, they were going to, you know, strap me to a stretcher and rendition me out of the country and shoot me full of mind altering drugs, which they did. They did all of that. But before I left the country, in the horizontal position, I was able to put a satellite phone call into my attorney, all right, Kevin Healy in California, and I said, I said, Kevin, you've got the greatest set of war crimes unfolding, okay, in U.S. history. Contact the head of the Southwest Asian Command, Stanley McChrystal, and tell him that I am still breathing as he's lying on the airport runway, the tarmac, at Balad Air Base, and I better be breathing when I arrive in Germany. And he did exactly that. He immediately contacted Stanley McChrystal, by the way, and said, look, his client is breathing. He doesn't have 3 bullets in his head yet. And I expect him to be on that plane instead of disappeared on the plane. I expect him to be on the plane and breathing when he gets to Germany. And by the way, that is committing an international incident when he is taken through, against his will, taken through German airspace. Which it did, by the way. Okay. The American government actually lied to the German government and said that I was on that plane voluntarily. All right. Everything was all right with the world, and I was on it voluntarily. But I did arrive in Germany, still breathing, obviously.
And they're actually going to look into that too, aren't they? All these allegations.
Oh yes, I actually have the status now with the International Criminal Commission, okay, in Nuremberg, as a victim of super rendition.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm the only U.S. citizen ever to survive the process. And right now, I'm the only U.S. citizen to ever take this into a court of law. So,
well, Greg,
I'm not familiar with that
terminology.
At least in this context.
Okay, rendition means, okay, it's one of those campy new words that they came up with. Like prisoners aren't really prisoners anymore; they're detainees. Okay. Mm-hmm. And to be kidnapped and abducted and tortured is not being kidnapped, abducted, and tortured anymore. It's called rendition.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
And so, right.
A nice.
Okay. And so
easy, you know, to flow off the tongue word that kind of just sounds like, you know, let's
nice fluffy words,
fluffy
right?
Little act.
Nice fluffy words, right?
Right? Exactly. What's the problem here? You know,
this rendition of the song.
Right, and detainees, oh gosh, I just have to be walking along the street and they pulled over and asked me a few questions. I was just detained, right? No. Look at Abu Ghraib, all right? Look at some of those photos, and if you want to see detainees, okay, and their detainers in action.
Horrible.
Which, by the way, was my group. My group was that group that was doing the torture and abuse. So, and I was the doctor expected to put the bodies back together again.
To patch them up.
After we had broken them. Right.
Yeah.
So awful. I
do understand, and this is my thought process on all of this as a result of my experiences, is that, yes, the President of the United States should not be involved in war crimes, and he should not be involved in exploiting, you know, the citizens of America, okay, to make money for a few big megalithic corporations.
That should go without saying. So yeah. Why is it the fact that we have people in that office who get away with that day in and day out? How does that happen?
Right.
Well, Greg, I want to get back this last 5 or 6 minutes here to Nanine, and let's concentrate on what's next,
Steven,
for her. If you want to stay on and listen, Greg, that's fine. But
okay, great. So, no, by all means. So,
what's next for you, Nanine?
As I said, I studied the way societies are broken up, and the dismemberment of the nuclear family, as in the Soviet state, as in Nazi Germany. That was a priority, and it was done through various organizations targeting the family.
Can I just say this? I do believe in the strength and the importance of the nuclear family if it's a healthy family. I didn't come from a very healthy family, so I'm not sure that the nuclear breakup of my family would have done me a lot of harm. I came out all right, so I don't want to mess with it. But the fact of the matter is there are very many nuclear families that are just broken, and it doesn't harm us to break those up. I think the bigger issue is that we are increasingly willing to substitute a judge for a parent, and then think that that judge is somehow more capable and more competent to parent someone else's children than those parents. And that, to me, is absolutely, you know, it's an anathema to what our Constitution is for and what this country is supposed to be about. So I don't necessarily agree that, you know, breaking up the nuclear family is what ails us. I agree with you that education, to me, it's all about education. We need to teach our children the Constitution, and we need to teach our children to think critically. And we need to start, you know, I get this all the time. You know, somebody will say something, they'll express an opinion, and then I or someone else will respond with a different opinion. And then there comes all this, well, it's my right. We have now learned to equate criticism with the word shut up. And we all need to understand that the First Amendment is exactly so that we can have discussions where we don't necessarily agree with each other, but that it is for the purpose of having a discussion.
Yeah.
And we need to treat our children, we need to teach our children that, not to shut up.
Exactly.
Seen and not heard, yes. But to actually engage in important discussions and be willing to express their ideas and their opinions without being afraid of, you know,
well,
being ridiculed.
I think, Nanine, that people need to realize that that these people that are in control are not the lords and masters of the universe, and I've actually seen videos, Nanine, where police have accused people that talk about their constitutional rights, and they've gotten phrases thrown at them like, "Well, you read too much. You need to just."
Yeah,
you need to just sit down.
That is that those are the people that actually speak up. There are too many people who actually don't speak up, and they don't assert their rights. And you know, to me, that is the issue, is that we don't know what our rights are anymore. I mean, people walk into court every day trusting an attorney to tell them what their rights are. Wow, what a mistake that is.
Yes, it is. But
walk into court and know your rights to make sure that your attorney is actually standing up for your rights.
What's next for you, Nanine? What's the next step?
I have a foundation called Bridge to Justice Foundation, and you know, originally the idea was to be able to work as a nonprofit attorney to help people so that they could afford a representation. Obviously, I've got a little problem with that now, but what we can still do is offer mediation on a sliding fee scale, try to get people from going into court. We can offer, you know, we're going to try very hard to offer people education about the court system and how, you know, what to expect when they go into court. And you know, that's what I want to do anyway. You know, that's always been my love. And the reason I became an attorney was because of my passion for helping children, in particular, victims of domestic violence as well. But, you know, once I started practicing, just families. You know, it's terrible what we do to families.
Well, I don't know if you realize or not, Nanine, but represent. You break that word down, and it's just represent. People that go into court and do not have the knowledge and do not have the experience have to be represented.
Right. And that is why you hire an attorney. The whole idea is that you don't know. It's like going to the doctor. You know, you have to trust the doctor because they're the ones with all the training. And people, you know, are taught, and, you know, the whole profession is based on this idea that, you know, you can trust your attorney and that's who you should trust. And, you know, it's just become a joke. You know, I see it every day, or I used to see it every day. You know, attorneys, you know, particularly in family court, at least here in this parish, forget it. Your attorney will throw you under the bus in a heartbeat.
Well,
just to keep the judge happy.
It's not just your area or your parish, but it's all around the country.
It's terrible.
No,
it's destroying your country.
I can say one thing. Yeah, and I assume you pronounce your name Anine. Is that it?
Nanine.
Nanine. Oh, okay, boy. Nanine. Yeah, the audio is so tough out here. Nanine. Okay. My sister was a professor in the UC system, University of California system, and she was teaching, you know, the bonehead English courses. And she resigned a while back, and very upset. And I said, why did you resign, sis? And she said, because it's simply because of this. Since the Leave No Child Behind program, or the Bushes, I can't get college level students that come in that can read or write and can definitely not present themselves orally, okay, in a discussion.
And yet they have, and yet they have to pass them too, even if they're college students.
And they have to pass them. And her lesson plans were being downloaded every evening at 0001 by the FBI to make sure that she was in compliance
yes.
with the Leave No Child Behind program.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
you know, and we're out of time, Greg.
So,
yeah. I agree.
And we're out of time, Greg. I thank you for coming on and sharing a bit of an update with your story there. And I thank you, Naneem McCool, for coming on also and telling us your story.
Hey, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it. Nice to meet you, Greg. And hey, great.
It's a pleasure, Naneem. It's a pleasure. Absolutely. I hope to speak to you some other time also on another show.
Thanks.
So this has been really rewarding. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Steve.
All right. And we'll talk to you soon, Greg.
Okay. Goodbye, Naneem.
Goodbye, Greg. Goodbye, Stephen. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. The music should be taking over here, but it looks like the studio's a little bit lax, so I'm just going to sign off for the day before the music does come on and tell everyone I'll be back next Sunday with a new guest. And there's my music. So thanks, Naneem, for coming on again. And have a good day, everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this has been Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio, PSN Radio, and APRI Radio Network.